Liberty Workhouse, the medium security institution for the county and for this part of the state. We're going to be sharing with the inmates there through the medium of music, the gospel of Jesus Christ. Tomorrow night we'll be doing a concert mostly for inner city people downtown at 1411 Locust Street. That's on the third floor of New Life Evangelistic Center down there. Thursday night we'll be going to the state penitentiary in Jefferson City, doing the same kind of the same thing that we're doing tonight at the medium security institution here in St. Louis. And Friday night we'll be doing a concert to which all of y'all are cordially invited. It's at Florissant Civic Center Auditorium. That's in Florissant in North St. Louis. And it will be at 7:30, and admission will be free, and Tom will be playing, and also local St. Louis group called Liberty. So this time I'd like to introduce Tom Howard from Solid Rock Records and Street Level Artist Agency in Hollywood, California.
Good afternoon. Bon appetit, and whatever else we should say. Now, from the looks of this little thing that I saw hanging in the seminary dormitory, I take it there's a bit of a rift here at Concordia about contemporary Christian music. I imagine some of us here fall more toward one pole than the other. I would ask, first of all, the music that I'm involved in, I guess, pretty much makes the statement of where I'm at and what I believe can be used and so on. So what I'd like to do right at the outset is just open it up to any questions, and maybe we can zero in on some of the issues that are in your minds about this topic. Okay, how did I get involved in contemporary Christian music? By being a Christian and being involved in contemporary music, and expressing myself as an individual through music, and as a Christian, I express my faith and my walk with Christ through music. That's the medium that God's given me to use. The mechanics of how I got involved, I suppose, go back a few years to where I was working in more of a secular aspect of music, and there came a point in time where, I don't know how you'd want to term it, but I kind of gave these talents or these aspirations over to God for Him to use as He would see fit. The Christian musician today is dealing, he's kind of an anomaly, to say the least. He's dealing with permanent, eternal truths in the light, utilizing a very fleeting kind of pop culture, cultural mechanism, which is contemporary music. And there's a lot of talk about contemporary music. We do contemporary music because we want to reach the masses and so on. Well, that's one great aspect of it. You know, you have to speak people's language. Also, we just do the music that comes most natural to us as musicians. Someone that's been schooled all his life in contemporary music isn't going to go back to choir music or Gregorian chants or something to express his Christianity. He's going to use the mechanical apparatus that he already is most comfortable with. Yes?
Assuming, of course, that you have in the songs that you sing and the songs that you write, with any, you have a purpose, something, an idea you're trying to get across. How would you compare the purpose of the lyrics I'm thinking of, the purpose of your music with the purpose of older hymns that we sing in church? Do you see yourself aiming for the same purpose or a little different purpose? Or how do you compare them?
I think it's ultimately the same purpose. There are some differences, however. Liturgical hymns and worship music is just that. It's worship music. It's one genre of music used very explicitly to turn people toward God, to make for a worshipful atmosphere. Contemporary music of today is you can have Christian worship music in a contemporary vein. Also, you just have music which gets into the more base issues of life and just expressing life. Ultimately, as a Christian, we infuse our worldview, which is rooted in the scriptures, into our music. And so ultimately it leads toward glorification and worship of God. However, you might go around some corners in so doing. If an individual artist is expressing his life, just like you express your life in your conversations or maybe in writing or however you do it, it's not every bit of it geared toward kind of an iconography, if you will, where it's simply a vehicle of worship. Some of it has to do with human issues, some of it has to do with cultural issues, but all of it emanates from a Christian worldview. And hopefully, at its best, Christian contemporary music will do just that. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part. Well, the places I play, for the most part, I guess have already had a certain amount of acceptance because I don't think most sponsors will bring you in until they're reasonably sure that they're not going to lose their shirt by bringing you in. So they have some kind of backing already. I think there has been, on the one hand, a mellowing out of Christian music where it is much more accessible to a lot more people. And on the other hand, a large segment of the church has discovered that it's not all that scary. There is elements of it that they can accept and even enjoy. And so the two factors are kind of coming together. So there is a great influx of interest. And with that, I think, comes a danger of Christian music becoming kind of diluted, kind of watered down. The more people you reach with anything, it seems, the more you have to kind of make little compromises and so on. In other words, the big record companies now, the big Christian record companies, are expecting like contemporary Christian music to have a great boon, like country music or whatever. I think when that happens, we're going to see some dangers in that, especially if you're reaching more and more a secular audience with Christian music, if we don't keep infusing the truth of the gospel, which is still, to this day, a stumbling block and to many people. And when they're confronted with the gospel of Christ, there's going to be this watershed effect takes place, and people are going to be polarized. So we have to be careful that the pinpoint truth of the gospel is still in contemporary Christian music, even as it grows in popularity, or even if it does. Yes?
In country western music, you can see where there is a
dealing with cultural phenomenon. You're not dealing with gospel, or you're not dealing with Christianity. You're dealing with a civil religion that grew up with this country. It's not necessarily Christian. It has elements of Christianity. It has kind of that old homey feel, you know, that good time feeling that we get when we go home for Christmas or have Thanksgiving dinner or something. But it's not the truth of the gospel. Now, you can say, well, to me, personally, I would rather start with a fresh medium like pop music or rock music where there's no mistake. If you mention the name of Jesus Christ, you're talking about Jesus. You're not talking about, down on the farm or something. I'm not saying you can't express Christianity through country western music at all. I mean, there's some wonderful songs in that genre. But what we have to remember is that when we go into a culture, we're starting to deal with all of these little trappings that, it's an enculturated kind of thing. In other words, the Nashville music kind of thing has their little section, has their little corner for the gospel time or something. So in the course of singing about their barroom maids and, fighting in the tavern and stuff, midway through the show, they'll throw in a gospel number for mom and whatever, you know. Okay, so what does that mean? I'm not sure. I've never done that kind of music, so I can't make a personal judgment. But I do know that it doesn't strike me as very realistic, and it doesn't convict me to look into the truth of Jesus. So, I would not say, I wouldn't say that pop music is totally devoid of Christian expression either. For one thing, pop music is an amalgamation of many kinds of music. It's an amalgamation of old kind of Delta blues, of gospel music, of country western music. See, rock and roll came out of gospel music. Basically, it's the 1-4-5 kind of chord progressions, and the energy of rock and roll was a new thing. That's what made this big sweeping cultural difference. But basically, we're dealing with music that grew up out of American culture, and it's hard to section up, especially today. Music is very homogenized today, much to the discouragement of true rock aficionados and so on. But it's crossing a lot of musical lines. Did you have a question?
Yeah. My question is, I'm very fast, where do you think this music belongs?
Where does it belong?
Where does it belong?
Well, first of all, what do you mean by this music?
Your music, whatever
your...
I presume your modern gospel guitar...
Yeah, well, before you presume, you'd have to hear what I do. Well, no, if I could play Bach and Beethoven better than I could play this, I'd do that. Because I have more respect for that. But where I think it belongs is where people are. Wherever people are going to listen to it. I wouldn't say... There are some churches I wouldn't bring it into just because it would be too splintering of an experience. Where my music belongs, I have taken my music mainly into colleges, churches, kind of a youth gathering type of thing, like a festival or whatever. And seemingly that's where it belongs at this point. Now, some of the more mainstream type of contemporary expression has already found its way into like church youth choir books and so on. So you always have an element of contemporary Christian music which has kind of the standard or kind of lasting flavor to it. But the more kind of passing extreme elements of it, I don't think necessarily belong in the church. But I think the church would do well to investigate how it is being used and, if possible, to support it, at least just by encouragement or by, you know, by your prayers.
I agree. You maybe would be surprised when you get in the mainstream churches to find out how many of these modern things that have been rearranged.
Right.
They sound like they're written by Bach or straight. We've got together and are being treated.
Right. Right.
I don't understand that last scene. Well, I should hear that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good because it's kind of demonstrating, I think, a maturing process on both levels, on the level of the just contemporary Christian culture as a whole, and on the level of the musicians that are dealing and trying to see. I'll state again, the Christian musician is a bit of an anomaly because he kind of has his feet in both camps. In other words, he has his legitimate and oftentimes very forceful drives just within himself as an artist to express himself, okay? But he also is answerable to a transcendent standard. He's answerable to the church. He's answerable to his Lord as to what he can say and how he can say it. So there oftentimes is kind of a tension, but it's a creative tension if you allow it to be. There's a question back here. How would I respond to that? Well, it's the first time I've heard it, so it might take me a minute to respond. I see. Well, I agree with that statement for sure. We should not put Christ in the gutter. I don't know, I could wax poetic at this point, you know, and talk about cathedrals and gutters, but I guess I will wax poetic for just a minute. I guess one of the issues in contemporary Christian music or art or whatever you want to say is to kind of get Christ out of the Christian ghetto. Maybe not out of the Christian cathedral, but out of the ghetto where people are just totally pampering themselves and singing to each other, and it's all one big happy party, but there is no expression outside of the church being done. There's no gospel being brought to the people. And that, you know, is a matter of what you're led to do. I mean, some people are led to have more of a liturgical kind of existence where you make it inviting for people to come in. Now, to tell you the truth, I'm more inclined to that. I'm not inclined to go out and proselytize, but the type of music I've been kind of put into by the Lord, that's one of the flags that we fly, you know, to bring the gospel to the people. Now, You know, there again is a point of tension. Let me just stress, all the way through this hour, anybody, any thinking person that is working in contemporary Christian music always feels these points of tension. In other words, we're not just out in Disneyland just having a great time doing our music and not ever worrying about these issues. I'm right smack in the middle, always kind of going back and forth in my own head of how much you can do and how much you should not do. In other words, if I want to go minister to the prostitutes down in East St. Louis, I don't have to go consort with them to do it. I can bring the gospel into these people, but in other words, I don't have to play their game. Now, it can be the same way with music. There are certain things in music I just simply won't do because it's totally unrealistic to me. And all it would be is a bunch of flash and nothingness. And that's what contemporary secular music offers today for the most part. We're at a strategic place in music right now where we can offer them quality, but we can also offer them real content. In other words, we can keep up with the quality, the production aspect of music, but we can also offer them content. Now, to me, to talk about dragging Christ into the gutter through any means, well, it seems very reactionary and very unrealistic to me. For one thing, I would want to know the people that would be saying this, have they ever been involved in music? Or have they ever been involved in art? Do they know the ramifications of trying to infuse Christian truth and doctrine into the arts? If not, maybe they have a plank in their eye, and they should be kind of pulling that out first. But that would take a long discussion, you know. You know, how much do we drag Christ into any of our gutters? You know, I mean, we're dealing with the world, right? We're out there, we're walking, we're sojourning through our little existence here. We're dealing with gutters. Sure, we're dealing with the gutters inside of our own hearts. But Christ has come into those hearts, and he's dealt with them. Paul said he didn't deem equality with God something to be grasped at, but he emptied himself. He became human in our likeness. Well, he came into the gutter. You know, so these terms, which are infused with so much emotion, you know, when we get into these issues, actually there's a lot of truth to it, I guess. Yes. I guess there's a question right here, sir.
I'm one of those who has some very serious reservations,
especially. I agree. That did look a little presumptuous. Have to look at it in perspective of the timeline that is, you know, say from Elvis Presley to present. I think it's significant that God has not really used so-called rock music up until this present time, because rock music in its infantile stages was more of a primitive kind of it was very much aligned with rebelliousness, especially in the 60s. It was aligned with drugs and so on and so forth. Okay, even here though, we have to separate rock from pop music. Now personally, I'm more involved in what I would call pop music. I don't play rock and roll music because I don't get up with a band. I don't have drums, I don't have bass and so on. I record with those instruments, but I don't play, you know, in concert with them. Okay, I think rock music as a genre of its own has matured to a point where it's not so much identified anymore with those just blatant non-Christian elements. That it still exists, just like non-Christian elements exist in literature and in movies and so on and so forth. But I think at this point in time, excuse me, there's more, it's much easier to speak of Jesus Christ in this type of music. I, for one, am very aware that any time you bring Jesus into any kind of cultural expression, you have to be careful not to water it down, or you have to be careful not to get sidetracked into some like a superhero kind of aberration or something from who Jesus really is. All I can say is that the people I work with and the Christian music that I've listened to, I don't think has any element of that. I think you had your secular expressions of it in like Jesus Christ Superstar and so on. But Christian rock is totally diametrically opposed, and it stands face to face with that kind of expression, and just even in the teeth of that kind of expression, it expresses Christian truth. For anyone who wonders about like the Christology of rock music and Christian rock and so on, first of all, I would have to ask, have you taken the time to listen to any of it? Have you taken the time to listen to a lot of it in that, so that you can start to throw some in the wastebasket and have some that you like and so on? Because in any kind of expression, you can have a testimony service at a church, and you can have five different people get up, and maybe three of them, you really get the feeling they're saying something real about our Lord. The other two, you might get the feeling that they haven't quite grasped hold of their faith yet, you know. It's the same way with music. It's the same way with literature. People are expressing their beliefs in Jesus Christ. Now, some of them hit the mark, some don't. I'd have to ask, how many of you listen to? Yes?
A little while ago, you mentioned that rock and roll, one of its roots is in gospel music itself. You mentioned that it took the basic pattern of adding energy, which you know, is very evident in a lot of, especially the older rock and roll music. A concern of some people is that the energy of rock and roll, you know, will excite people, you know, get them, you know, especially if you're using it in a Christian, you know, setting of Christian rock and roll, you can use it to excite people and get them excited about Jesus or whatever it is that you're presenting with. But once it's over, that no message or no growth has occurred. You know, it's just, you know, you get caught up with it, and then once it's over, you're left, you know, with no substance. How would you speak to that? How do you react to that or prevent that or whatever?
Well, again, it's the artist's responsibility. For instance, I've never been to a Christian rock concert, but that there hasn't been a certain amount of this energy, what I would just call fun, you know, just... I've worked a lot, even before I was in music, with Young Life or, you know, things like that. And one of the tactics, if you will, was to just run these kids ragged for about an hour and get it all out of them, get it out of their system, let them have a lot of fun, no social redeeming value except that they, you know, let off a lot of energy. And then they're ready to listen to you. You've shown them a good time, you know, like James says, he kind of implied, don't bring someone the gospel and say, be warm and filled, and then just leave them still hungry. Well, it's the same way with kids, or the same way with people that have some kind of appetite for entertainment. Give them what they are expecting. If you're up there doing a concert, they expect to be entertained to a certain degree. Fill that for them, and then get to the real stuff. And I've never seen a gospel concert or a rock Christian concert that has not happened. Of course, I haven't seen that many, I guess. I'm too busy doing it myself. But I'm very disappointed personally if it doesn't happen, because I might as well go hear someone else. I might as well go hear a really professional, just secular entertainment or something. But I think your point is well taken. If we are truly, if our aim is to express Jesus Christ or to bring people into that thought awareness, we have to turn the corner. Not just in concert, but on our albums and in any kind of media we do, interviews or whatever. That has to, but you know, I've never met a contemporary Christian artist that didn't have just a burning desire to see that happen. Let me take a couple here, yeah. On two levels again. As an artist, music is just music. Music is my profession, it's my occupation, it's something I, you know, keep food on the table and so on. And it's an expression of creation, of taking part in God's creation as a musician. But superimposed on top of all of that is that I'm a Christian. So there, music becomes not just an entity in and of itself, it becomes a tool, it becomes a mode of expression. So for the Christian, I think music, for the most part, the great kind of middle ground of music, now I'm not talking about just freaked out weirdness, I've never had a taste for that anyway. But music, for the most part, is a neutral phenomenon. And we infuse our philosophies into music. There's classical pieces. I think Sibelius or someone. One of those people had a very, very strange and deep occult belief. Almost a Satanism, but his works were so beautiful, but they were written from that point of reference. And I wouldn't be surprised if his records are playing all over, you know, just traditional Christian stations, you know, because it's such pretty music. But there you go, wow, you know, that's coming from a totally anti-Christian viewpoint. So we take our beliefs and our philosophies and we infuse them into music, or not only just lyrically, but just the whole fiber of the music emanates from some point. And Bach dedicated every one of his works to the glory of God. And I don't know, I guess the Christian, I just have a natural affinity to that kind of music because it speaks not just to my mind and my artistic taste, it speaks to my spirit because somehow there's some kindred thing happening there. Yes, sir. Yeah, I do. Let's look at rock music kind of against the backdrop for a moment of traditional gospel music, the kind of music that is pretty much universally accepted across the boards. I don't think most Christians would have much of a problem, say, with the Bill Gaither type of thing or so on. I grew up in a family that played a lot of gospel music and so on. I mean, traditional gospel music. And most of it was very nice and very Christ-centered. However, the overall fabric of it, to me as a youngster even, kind of defined kind of a shallow, don't rock the boat kind of mentality. Maybe it was just the product of the 50s or whatever, because, you know, most people agree that that was more the permeating philosophy of that day. Rock and roll came in. At its worst, what it said was, let's do away with all the institutions, yada, 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 you know. And most people, you know, I remember, this is an aside, but it's kind of indicative of where rock music was when I was younger. I was going to the university, it was during the anti-war days, and you'd have one person get up and say, we gotta do this and that, and most people go, yeah, yeah, right on, you know, with this whole thing. And I was just kind of watching, you know. And then someone would get up and say something totally contradictory to that, what the person before had just said. And the same people would be going, yeah, yeah, right on. You know, because it was a mindless acceptance. It was a mindless following. You go to most rock concerts today, that's exactly what you see. It's still this mindless kind of, oh, feed me anything, man, you know. Because what we're dealing with here are very, very profound and lasting issues. We're dealing with a whole generation of people that have lost their absolutes. They've fallen into, it's an interesting word you used, and I was just reading on a plane the other day in Lewis's Christian Reflections, an article called The Poison of Subjectivism. And he's talking about how, whereas before a man used to figure out everything else about the universe with his reason, now, at the turn of the century, even, you know, 50 years, 70 years ago, he began to question reason itself. In other words, it's like taking out your eyeballs so you can look at them. In other words, the whole foundation of man's thought came into question. Now, the fruits of that, I think, really took hold in the 50s. Not just with rock music. Rock music was one indication of it. But just the whole permeating philosophy, the secularism of our times. I'm going to answer your question really roundabout, but this question really opens up a whole just arena of issues, which is that we have, as a contemporary culture, fallen into such a deep-seated secularism that we have to approach that with real force, real dynamism. Now, my question is, did the gospel music kind of thing ever do that? Did it approach that, or did it just give us kind of a thin veneer of, well, I guess I believe in the Lord, you know, kind of thing? I mean, it didn't come across that way in the music, but the whole mentality of it was, don't worry about a thing, Jesus is there, and the Lord's upstairs, and we can all love him. Well, rock music came in and said, no. And you had a whole bunch of people that were questioning all that, you know, the breakdown of the institutions and so on. Okay, the Christians took that over, and with that same spirit of digging in and rejecting pat answers and so on, we put on top of that, Christ is the answer. And we're not afraid of any of the questions. We're not afraid of your questions. We're not afraid of your the issues that you bring up, because we know Jesus is the truth. So there is a certain amount of subjectivism, because you get into deeper issues of life. You get into issues like human need and human hurt and so on, and you might even dig a little deeper with your songs and so on. But, you know, it's like any other Christian's life. Sooner or later you have to turn the corner, and the ground level, the basis of what you say, has to be rooted in the eternal gospel of Christ. I think we're out of time. Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Did you want to say something about Friday or anything that's coming up?
Yeah.
Real quickly, just for a second.
Yeah. Two things I'd like to remind you one more time. Everyone's certainly welcome to come hear Tom and Liberty Friday night at Florissant Civic Center at 7:30. If you have any more questions, you can see me here on campus. And also, I'd like to put in a plug for Tom's album entitled View from the Bridge. If you don't have one, it's a super album. And he didn't tell me to do this, but I know his wife's hungry at home waiting for him to get back. So I said that before. So I thought I'd show you a copy of it too. So.
Okay, next week we're going to have Dr. Fred Harm, who will be with us. He's going to be leading us in a Bible study on the call, our call to service. I think it's going to be more a broader kind of a topic than just the pastoral call. I think it'll really be good. If any of you have Fred, Dr. Harm for class, you know how stimulating and how really deep a thinker and a speaker he is. So I invite you all to be here for that. Just join me real quickly here for a short prayer. Father, you know us better than we know ourselves, and you know our needs. Lord, at times we